meta talk than a string theory talk. At least I'm kind of being string theorist, trying to pretend to do real physics and talk about things like transport properties and connectivities and diffusion constant. And so basically recently, in, using the CFT correspondence, people have developed a large set of tools to compute properties like connectivity of condensed matter systems, and I'm just applying that to defect field theories. First I'm going to tell you a bit of why this is interesting and give you some background of what I'm doing, and then I'm going to present some results, first in the conformal limit, which is basically kind of in a quantum critical phase at zero mass, zero density. And then I'm going to talk about some more physical regime where I turn on finite density and the magnetic field. And actually, if there's time, I can show up some fresh results of the classical Hall effect. And then I'm going to conclude. So basically, what are defect field theories? Basically, defect field theory is whenever you have matter confined to a d-1 hypersurface interacting via a d-dimensional bulk, which means that kind of any real 3+1 world two-dimensional system is effectively a defect because it always interacts with electromagnetism in the bulk. And those may have interesting properties, such as a Hall connectivity, for example. And what we use the CFT correspondence for it, firstly because we can do the strong coupling limit, which otherwise requires lattice simulations and all sorts of nasty stuff. And we can cover the whole parameter space in one computation. And normally, if you look at condensed matter papers, they say, "Ooh, I have some special limit where I've just about been able to compute some special quantity." So that's much easier to do in ADS-CFT than in ordinary field theory computations. And it's also a very physical way, once you have the right intuition, to model systems. And also kind of we just add a few more points on the map of what kind of computations can be done in ADS-CFT. First, let's talk about the background in the bulk in the field theory. It's just the ordinary ADS 5 cross S5 being equivalent to n equals 4 Young-Mills theory, which I think everybody has heard about. And there's just the standard dictionary. The ADS radius corresponds to the top coupling and NC. And the black hole temperature effectively gives you the temperature of the super Young-Mills theory. And we are working in the supergravity regime, which basically means the strong coupling limit. And kind of going to finite coupling means including higher order corrections in the gravity. So the setup is just a stack of the three brains with the kind of ordinary black hole solution. And so how do we create the defect in it? We are going to add some extra D brains. Basically, this gives us the super Young-Mills background here. And then we will have matter confined to the defect. And so if we add a D5 brain, it gives us, it breaks half supersymmetry, but half supersymmetry is preserved. So we kind of expect stability. And we are just going to get a set of hypermultiplets which are charged under the SUNC. And alternatively, we can break all of supersymmetry and add a stack of D7 brains. The interesting thing there is that we have only fermions living on the defect. And we kind of have to worry about stability issues, which I might comment later about. So what can we do? We can induce a finite quark density on the defect, which basically corresponds to turning on an electric field in the TR direction. And then we can turn on the magnetic field in the gauge theory, which just corresponds to turning on the magnetic fields on the brain in the bulk here. And we can turn on the finite mass, which corresponds to having a non-trivial embedding in the compact directions. And finally, we can turn on the flux in the compact directions, which kind of modifies the nature of the defect. And an interesting point is that, the conformal limit, the zero mass limit, corresponds to putting the compact sphere here on a maximal circle. And it turns out that in the D7 case, this is unstable unless we turn on a flux in the compact directions here. And this is, may or may not be related to an instability, general instability of 2+1 systems in 3+1 dimensions. So what do we want to compute? We want to compute a correlator of currents, which is going to give us a conductivity of via linear response theory. And how do we do that? We just do the ordinary ADS-CFT prescription. We set up the desired background with whatever mass and density we want to have. And then we solve the linearized equation of motion for the vector field on the brain. We evaluate the action on the brain. And then we just use the dictionary that the evaluated action gives us the partition function, and we can compute the correlator from it. So now I'm first going to talk about results in the conformal limit, where like mass and finite density magnetic field are all turned off. So here we are having some interesting property actually, in that the longitudinal and transverse correlators are correlated. So basically, we will, whenever I will talk about the y direction, it's going to be the transverse direction, and we kind of assume like a plane wave approximation where x is the longitudinal direction. And we can also compute analytically the limit as the temperature goes to zero, which has the interesting property that it's basically only given in terms of the rest frame frequency. And we see that we're going to have some kind of conduction threshold, which is given by the wave number. And in the homogeneous limit, where the wave number is zero, this is just going to be a constant. So now I'm just going to flash up some graphs for general entertainment. Here we have the transverse conductivity for some small wave number. And first I'm going to increase the flux in the compact direction. And what we see happens is that effectively it looks as if we decrease the temperature. So it approaches the T going to zero limit, and we will have some funny resonances in the optical regime here. And what if we were to zoom in, we could also see that here we have an exponential suppression, which kind of looks like a semiconductor. So now we are going to increase the wave number, and basically it just looks like kind of a bandgap of a semiconductor widening. So it looks more like a lower temperature. And the transverse correlator is basically just more or less the inverse of the longitudinal correlator. So we have kind of a similar behavior there. And if you look at the kind of resonances around the T going to zero curve, where we are going to work in the rest frame frequency, we see actually something interesting, which is, so here we increase F, and now we increase k, and as you see, nothing changes. Basically, they all look the same, independent of whether we look at the longitudinal transverse correlator error and whether we increase k. And this kind of motivates looking at the quasi-particle spectrum on the defect in terms of the rest frame frequency. So how do we find the quasi-particle spectrum on the defect? And basically, we just assume a set of poles in the complex frequency plane, which is kind of motivated by an approximation which we can do and which we can solve analytically. And then we're just going to fit it to the numerical results. And that is what we find, lots of scattered dots. These are just kind of the poles of the correlators in the complex frequency plane. So first of all, to justify the fitting of the poles to the connectivity, you can look at how far the crosses and squares are separated, which is basically those are an analytical result calculated for some approximation, and those crosses are come if we fit our ansatz of the poles in the complex frequency plane to the result, and we see if we go to large f. Basically, these results are pretty accurate, so the crosses are inside these squares. And so basically what you see is you have just a bunch of resonances which all lie on a straight line, which kind of motivates just assuming that we have more or less a resonance on the defect. And so we just see the tower of excitations. And well, okay, this is for the longitudinal correlator, and there we have some points. So we can also look at the diffusion limit. So before we were kind of at the large k, large frequency regime. It's basically kind of the optical regime. And now we are going, we are looking kind of at pretty much homogeneous excitations with small values of the wave number. And so there we just expect the diffusion relation to diffusion equation to apply. And that has been done in checked in ADS-CFT a long time ago for various systems. And in our system, we can also compute the diffusion constant. And we can also find the permittivity of the system. And then we kind of expect to have a form of the conductivity like this. And in the plot, we see that basically kind of the numerical results, which are the dashed lines, basically fits the expectation pretty well. So if you look explicitly at the diffusion pole, we look at first at the location of the diffusion pole in terms of the wave number scaled by the diffusion constant. So here we have kind of the diffusion regime, and there we have a second pole on the imaginary axis, which basically corresponds to some familiarization process or so. And the interesting thing is that actually the diffusion pole disappears at some wave numbers. So we go from a kind of collision dominated regime, like for a pretty much isotropic large-scale perturbations, to a kind of collisionless regime, kind of where the diffusion pole disappears. And so next I'm going to talk about an interesting effect which has been found some time ago by Pavel Kovtun for a similar system, which is that effectively, the relation between the longitudinal and transverse correlators, which we found earlier in the isotropic limit, tells us that the connectivity is just constant. And so that has been hinted at as being due to whatever, some special M-theory setup which he had, but it's pretty much a general feature apparently. And firstly, we see that independent of supersymmetry, because this applies both for the B5 and B7 case. And secondly, we can see when it gets broken. And so question is this relation true at, as we go to finite lambda? And it turns out, no. It's just a strong coupling effect. And so we can turn on some higher order gauge field terms in case we have a flux on the compact S2 or S4. Or if we have zero background flux, we can also look at higher order curvature corrections. And what happens, I'm not going to show any graphs, but what happens is that relation gets broken and the constant conductivity gets some frequency dependence. Now another question is that normally you would assume that for Hall connectivity, you need both a magnetic field and a finite density. Because if you just have pair production, well, you know, if we have equal mass of the positive and negative carriers, you're not going to see any Hall effect. And so the question is, can we have without any magnetic or field or finite density a Hall effect? The answer is yes. We can turn on an RR scalar, which induces a Trans-Simons term, and a Trans-Simons term induces a Hall connectivity. And there's actually something interesting about this result here, which is the flux integer on the compact S2 sphere. So that is just an integer divided by G Young Mills squared times some number, and it kind of looks a bit like a Hall connectivity. But we still need to interpret it more in a condensed matter context. So now I'm going to talk briefly about the condensed matter limit. The preliminaries are, like, if you consider just some scaling properties of various terms in the action, you find that the ADS-TFT prediction prescription is does not get modified by including an electric or magnetic field on the probe brain. And so then basically all effects just come from extra terms in the equations of motion. So now I'm just going for showing for your general entertainment some results. We are looking at the isotropic limit where we have zero wave number. So it's just constant in frequency. And now we turn on a finite density. And what we see is that we get some finite connectivity, which kind of looks a bit like a dude peak. And we have here some whatever plasma frequency resonance. And now we can turn on the wave number. And we basically kind of see here still the optical regime. And now we have the remnant of a dude peak kind of at zero frequency, which kind of is a bit similar to doping a semiconductor. So now we can decrease the density, and we're going to turn on a magnetic field, which kind of washes out this step. And as we decrease the wave number now, we see some suppression of the conductivity here and some magnetic resonance peak there. We can do the same thing at finite F, so finite flux on the compact S2 or S4, and first we decrease the magnetic field. And basically then we see more or less the same behavior, just with more prominent resonances and different frequency of the resonances. Okay. It kind of looks a bit like Larmor resonances, but we're not still quite sure about it yet. Well, we could describe it in terms of some potential structure, but I'm going to skip this here. So I'm just briefly showing that you can also produce a classical Hall effect, which is basically as you increase the magnetic field, you increase the Hall connectivity. But you have some pretty anomalous behavior here that the Hall connectivity turns negative and has kind of some kind of resonances. So if you increase F, actually kind of this this resonances here, like they have an increase in frequency. So now to conclude, we modeled both supersymmetric and non-supersymmetric systems, and they all look the same. And we could parameterize the nature of the defect using the flux on the compact sphere. And what I didn't talk about is there's like an interesting potential structure around the defect, which leads to interesting thermodynamics. And we have an instability, which may or may not be related to a classical instability. And we had this conduction threshold, and the system well described with resonances in terms of the resonant frequency. And there was the effect of the flat homogeneous connectivity, which we found gets broken at going to finite coupling. And one interesting point is that if we were to do the same recipe with turning on C0, but turning on non-constant for C0, we get actually some pretty funny connectivity behaviors. And basically, we get a very rich structure of transport properties, but we still need to really understand it from a condensed matter point of view, because otherwise we are just being string theorists and not knowing condensed matter theory. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks for